Welcome to the Revenue Throughput Podcast, the show for B2B owners who are hungry for growth, stuck on a plateau, or just want better ways to deal with the everyday challenges of revenue growth. You'll hear from industry experts and fellow boots-on-the-ground business owners who will share their practical and powerful strategies for B2B business success. I'm your host, Jose Palomino, CEO of ValueProp and creator of the Revenue Throughput System. Now on to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Revenue Throughput Podcast. This is Jose Palomino, your host. And today's guest is Rachel Rosen, CEO and co-founder of WEX Energy. And Rachel and her team are bold enough to bring a new technology into an industry that's pretty well established. And we're going to talk about her journey, how she figured out how to crack the code, how to break the ice and make some forward traction happen in her industry. And it's an exciting story. So we look forward to hearing directly from Rachel as she joins our show right now. Well, welcome, Rachel, to the Revenue Throughput Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Rachel, one thing that's always helpful for our listeners is when our guest just describes for themselves briefly, like what they do and who they do it for.
Sure, no problem. So I'm CEO of WEX Energy. I often introduce myself, though, as a recovering landlord, having worked for almost 30 years in property management, development, and ownership. So I think of myself as a recovering landlord. Okay. Still a landlord, but I'm not in the active side of it. Our business model, you know, makes it really simple, quick, and very affordable to improve window insulation. And you probably don't know this, but windows are the most porous component of a building envelope. And these days, that matters. So everyone wants windows in their home. They want them in their office. I've not met anyone who wants to work and live in a basement or under a rock, right, or, you know, in the dark. But windows are really expensive to replace. And we talk about it as an ROW, not an ROI, but an ROW, the return on windows. And the return on windows is negative. Now, I'm not saying you should never replace windows. We're good about losing a job to a good window, high quality window replacement, sure, because windows do need to be replaced. But we're that interim between when your window is new and when you're not ready, because your window is functionally going to be good for 40, 50, 60, even 100 years. And that's where our company comes in and we make a difference.
So what's interesting about that, Rachel, is, you know, windows as a technology, the idea of a window, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know when the first time, you know, in medieval times, maybe put glass up of some sort, you know, it used to be just be like a cutout or something, but
a cutout with a shutter, with right? A shutter, that was, yeah, the first window, really.
So this is not a, you know, if we were talking to somebody who's dealing with like computer chips or software, it's an industry that's fast changing. And I'm sure there's been technological advances, but you're introducing something that to something that people think intuitively, I know what a window is. And if I'm a builder in the trade, I know what windows are. So how were you able to like bridge that gap from, yeah, I already know what that is, to we actually have something new and interesting that you should pay attention to?
So it's a really interesting question that you're asking, because it is a struggle we have. And we, you know, I come from that construction world. Mm-hmm. You know, from the real estate side. And honestly, in 30 years, I replaced windows once.
Okay.
That tells you how seldom windows are replaced. And generally speaking, when I speak to landlords, early in the conversation, I almost always say, just tell me, when are you replacing the windows? And these are their answers. Never over my dead body.
Okay.
I'll sell the building for a few percent less before I go through that.
Wow.
So windows are replaced when they're really not working, or if you're doing a major rehab in which you're bringing rents up a lot and you can justify the expense of new windows with this added rent that you're bringing into your building. But doing windows when people are in place is just terrible. It's really
like
difficult.
If you're converting, let's say, a commercial loft into apartment space or something.
Right. Or you bought the handyman special.
Right.
And the building's pretty empty and you're maybe emptying it out and you're doing a major renovation.
Okay.
So then you might address the windows because you've got the scaffolding, you've got the crews there, you're doing this major job. But otherwise, people don't really replace windows. And what they also don't understand about windows is they know that they're cold or hot, depending on the time of year and where you live. They know when they're near the window that they're more uncomfortable.
Okay.
But nobody thinks about the window because they're looking through the window. And if the window isn't
literally broken, invisible, right?
Right. It's an invisible, and our product's invisible. You don't see it when it's on the window. So okay. It's really hard to explain to someone what a window skin is when you can't see it.
Okay.
And it's by design, you can't see it. Otherwise, you wouldn't want it there because you don't want something in the way of your view out the window.
So right? Like a typical homeowner that, let's say, there's no such thing as a typical homeowner, but somebody, let's say, with a 3,000 square foot suburban house, right?
Right.
You know, four bedroom, center hall, colonial kind of thing, has 18, 20 windows, and they're drafty. They're saying, honey, look at these bills. They're going through the roof. So right now, their alternative is replace all the windows, right? Which is not a small.
Probably in the 15,000 plus range.
Easy.
For that 3,000 square foot house.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So
maybe 20,000 or more.
Right. So it's like we got hit by the tail end of a tornado and it took out part of our roof. So we had to have the roof replaced. And as a homeowner, you're thinking, I don't want to do any of these things. Like, this is not my preference. So windows would fall definitely into the I don't want to do it category. So your technology, your product, and I refer to it as a technology because I think there's some real invention in how
there is real invention. There's real science behind it.
Okay.
It is technology, but most people think of technology as a piece of software,
mm-hmm.
you know, or maybe a little doodad you put on to your computer or your boiler or your something that makes it a little more efficient. But they don't think of technology as being a hardware, but hardware does have technology.
Sure.
You know.
And so you apply, as I understood it, looking at the videos, it's really fascinating. I recommend anyone to go to wexenergy.com and check it out. It literally is a skin that goes into the window.
It's a snap-on window insulation panel.
Okay.
Okay. So it's really, we create a gap between your window and the window skin. Window skins are not sitting on a shelf in a warehouse waiting for you to order them. They are all custom manufactured because there's no standard window. In the world.
There
might be in the world, not even in America, in the world. There may be standard windows in a building, you know, an apartment building, an mm-hmm. office building, a garden complex apartments, right? You'll see like the windows repeat. There's 4, 5, 6 sizes, you know, in style of window.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that you might have a standardization within a property or a building, but you will not have it across buildings. There's that much variation. In fact, we were on a college campus working in a dormitory, and they knew that we were interested in having some windows to test with, just to test stuff on. Yeah. And they called us and said, oh, you know, we're doing a major renovation of the building, the dorm next door. And if you guys are in the area in the next 2 to 3 weeks, call us. You can come and pull windows because they're taking them out. When we go to pick up the windows, and they look exactly the same. You look at the two buildings, you don't think there's anything different. The windows were 1/2 inch smaller on width.
Wow. So it's not something you could pick
up at all. And they were probably built within a couple of years. I don't remember exactly. They were either 1 or 2 years off in when they were built. So it's the same plans, but you come back a year or two later. Now the manufacturer is making that window, for whatever reason, is making that window 1/4 inch or 1/2 inch narrower, something like that, and it changes.
Wow. And then so you're obviously that means your skins have to be applied to very specific dimensions.
Right. We have a little bit of wiggle room because even in this building where you have, you know, let's say you have 500 windows in a dorm, right, or an apartment building,
mm-hmm.
And there's 3 different sizes. Well, we're not going on a brand new window. So even though there's variation in the brand new window out of the manufacturer, it's within a very small margin. We're coming in when those windows are 20, 30, 40, 50, 80 years old, they've been caulked, they've been painted, the framing, you know, the sash around the holding glazing has shrunk or expanded depending on what the material is. Remember also, are we measuring in the winter or in the summer? Because we have to make sure that when we are measuring, whatever we're measuring to, the window skin is going to fit in the summer when everything's expanding and in the winter when everything contracts.
That's not a small feat to figure
out. No, that's why there's a lot of technology. People don't understand. how much technology is really behind this. So we picked up these windows and, you know, we're able to work and test on them, but they are different than the building next door. That's how variable windows are. And I don't remember if we talked about this when we chatted the last time, but we are really on B2B focused right now. Mm-hmm. So in your example of a homeowner, while we think WindowSkin is a great product for homeowners, and we get calls all the time. You know, we get calls from Texas when it's 9 degrees, you know, like, can I order them now? Can you ship it tomorrow? That's not how it's working right now. We're not really geared to the individual homeowner or apartment dweller right now. On occasion, if it's the right fit, we will do it. Like we had a woman call from Cambridge last year. Just so happens, all her windows are the same.
Okay.
She told me they were. I didn't believe her because the truth is most of them are not. Right. And then she showed me a picture and I said, oh yeah, it looks like seven are the same and one isn't, which is exactly what she said. And then when she sent measurements, it was really true. So we said, you know what? We'll do you when we do the next manufacturing run. That way, you know, the cost won't be as high for you because we can tag you on to other jobs we're doing.
Right.
We don't normally do homes, but I think yours will be an interesting test case for us. So we do them from, you know, time to time. So if you call and we say no to you, don't take it personally. But we also take names so that as distributors come on board and as we get to a place where dealing with an individual home, you know, a 3,000 square foot home could have 20 to 25 windows. You could have 12 different or 15 sizes.
Yeah, I'm visualizing now. Yeah, easily. Yeah, sure.
Right. So just think about that. We're talking about making 500 WindowSkins or WindowSkins for 500 windows, of which there's three or four sizes.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, I'm going to make WindowSkins for 25 windows, of which I have 15 sizes. So you can see why the value proposition is just not going to be as good, especially because we're geared to that volume manufacturing at this stage of our development as a company.
But that raises, so I'd like to just explore a little bit around the strategy of things, right? So here you are, new technology in a business that's been around a long time that works a certain way, right? So like building supplies go through distribution, either, you know, two tier, one tier, depending on the region and so on. And it's pretty, I'm not going to say it's that they won't accept any change, but it's a hard to change industry, right? So as you come out with something brand new, really innovative, how do you crack that code? Because I'm sure many listeners to this podcast are also in businesses. They have good ideas and they're saying, but we're, you know, they're smaller companies. They don't have like, you know, $100 million branding budgets.
And neither do we.
Okay. So how did you think through, how do we get some traction in these markets that are kind of slow to change?
So first of all, you have to think about your market in two different ways. There's the macro level. So at the macro level, we're addressing existing build, you know, older windows. So there are 3.8 billion windows that are 20 years old or older in North America, US and Canada. Okay. And that's split pretty evenly between the B2B and the B2C market, mm-hmm. between private homeowners and the rest. Okay. So it's a giant market. The truth is 0.1 or 2% of the market and I'm flying, right?
Of course.
So you have to understand how big the opportunity is. And you can have a huge amount of opportunity, whether you have billions of, you know, in our case, billions of windows we can address, or maybe it's only 100,000 or a few 100,000, right? In a micro niche. At the end of the day, we're a small company, we're a startup. So to go out there and think we're going to capture a market that has billions of windows, well, that's like, what am I smoking right now? Or it's not really seltzer in my cup. Okay. So we have a huge opportunity, but then we have to say, where are we going to make the best bang for the buck? What's most important? How are we going to do that? So we first identified higher education as a very good market for us. Hmm. And then affordable housing or lower income housing. Okay. As two markets in which the cost of windows, and I can tell you as a landlord, windows were always like one or two when we buy a new property. But I told you I only did it once in 30 years.
Right.
They're just too expensive. There are too many other things that need to get done and the return is very poor. So we started there and we actually did a soft launch to market in 2019. And we were really kicking, you know, kicking up to get going in 20. And what happened? COVID hit.
Oh, yeah.
And that that changed everything. Now, there are companies who COVID was a bonanza for them. You know, Zoom did right. 10 times better because of COVID.
Sure.
You know, and some of the, you know, there are lots of companies that this was a real driver. Right. And opened up
plexiglass producers.
Yeah, that's right. So on the other hand, for companies like us, we're selling to you either in your home, although we're not selling directly to you in your home, mm-hmm. but we're selling to a building owner that has to put it in somebody's apartment or somebody's office, mm-hmm. right? You have to get into the space to measure. And that was impossible. I realized in early April of 2020, we couldn't go out and sell because mm-hmm. we had to pause. Because at that point, I just put myself in the landlord's seat and thought to myself, hey, if Rachel called you and the first thing she said was, I have a way of reducing some of your costs and making your tenants more comfortable. I'm going to improve your energy situation at the window. What would you do? And it was like, click. Because my only concern in April of 2020 was COVID. How do I keep my building staff safe and healthy? And how do I keep my tenants safe and healthy? And that was true for 18 months.
And even also the other factor of, you know, governmentally mandated rent holidays.
Yes. So, when that came out, as much as I thought it was the right thing to do from a social perspective, I thought to myself, well, that's going to make life really hard. Because
there are a lot of smaller investors.
Legitimate reason to evict someone.
Right.
You can't. It was an eviction moratorium.
Right.
So there were a lot of complications and it was very clear to me somewhere between the second and third week of the shutdown that we couldn't go out and do any kind of direct selling. If we did that, we were basically going to cut our nose to spite our face. Mm. So, you know, then what do? You can't just sit back and say, oh, I'll drink margaritas on the beach and do nothing until I can call somebody. And so we decided to, our strategy at that point was one, to go after utilities, because we were getting asked, you know, does the utility offer a rebate? Well, we hadn't really gotten to them yet. It takes a very long time to get the utilities to even know your name, let alone approve you for some kind of incentive payment. Okay. So we said, well, we can't go to the customer right now. I may as well go to the utility. And people were saying to me, oh, you're crazy. It'll take you at least 4 years, if not longer. I know people that it took 7. I said, well, if I don't start now, it'll take even longer. And what do I have to lose?
Right.
Okay, here's the upshot. Con Edison approved Windowskin for rebate payments for their small, medium business and multifamily customers in under 10 months.
Wow.
It is unheard of. We have utilities calling us. We are actively working with about 6 other utilities right now.
So you broke the ice.
And we broke the ice. Yes. Yeah, so for Con Edison, it was really important because, as you probably are aware, and many of your listeners are, downstate New York has a real natural gas delivery problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a moratorium in Westchester. There just isn't enough gas. They can't bring more gas into the city. They have to reduce gas usage, okay, to meet the needs of all the other customers that can't get to it yet or that are expanding. So for Con Edison, When we came to them, we were actually addressing a very critical need for them right now with a solution that no one else had. And we had, and the other part of our pivot was COVID presented an interesting opportunity that all of a sudden there were a bunch of these carbon neutrality competitions, okay, that could be done online, you know, and through Zooms,
okay,
and whatever the platform. And so we looked for those competitions that were right in our lane. You know, and that's really important because there's a ton of competitions out there.
Sure.
And we entered and we won. We won a number of them. So that, you know, that sent some non-dilutive financing our way, which is always a very nice thing, but it also gave us traction in a different way, got us in front of people that would not have heard of us. And I'm starting to get calls now for people that heard pitches 2 years ago. Somebody called me a couple of weeks ago and I said, you know, I'm friendly with so-and-so judge, which whose name I didn't remember, but in one of these competitions. And I heard you 2 years ago at this and this and this. And I'm thinking, and you're calling me now, like you even remembered who we were. Yeah. And I'm working with co-ops and condos in New York, and this is really important. I'd like to talk to you about this. But he wouldn't have called me a year ago, because a year ago, none of his clients were thinking about their energy usage. They were still only thinking about COVID.
Wow. So let me just break this down a little bit, because I'm following this incredible, you know, one is I see the power of getting one influential yes. Con Edison opens doors, because now right. you have the imprimatur of a peer organization. So other right. utilities say, oh, that must be, if it's good enough for them, it probably is going to be good enough for us.
Right. It's Con Edison. It's not, you know, some little utility in Podunk.
Wherever. Right. So that's powerful. And what I love about that story too, Rachel, is, you know, despite people telling you it's going to take 4 years, it's going to take 7 years, whatever, you know, classic entrepreneur, you say, well, you know, it's going to take what the time is going to take, but it starts from trying. And so you tried and it turned in your favor, you know. So a lot of times business leaders limit themselves. And I, you know, my mantra is always, you know, I'd rather have a customer tell me no than I tell myself no on their behalf.
Right. That's like I always say, I don't like to negotiate with myself.
Okay.
Right. That's not a good situation to be in. Now, honestly, if COVID hadn't come, I don't know that we would have approached Con Ed or any of the other utilities that quickly.
Right.
Right. Because we were really working to bring customers online. But at the point that we really couldn't go to the customer, and we already had customers that were, well, we want to do an order. All of a sudden, you can't come. You can't measure. We can't measure. My landlord friends built people that we talk to, not, and they're not my friends, people that are our customers, people that I'm meeting, you know, on the street now, have told me that they had not been in their offices, apartments for at least 18 months. I can't imagine owning and managing my buildings and never walking in unless there's a major emergency.
Oh, that can't be good.
Can you imagine not putting an eye on a property,
right?
You know, inside anywhere for 18 months, because you couldn't. So it really changed the dynamic. So if COVID hadn't come and shut us down in that way, I don't know that I would have gone to the utilities. But once I couldn't go straight to my customer for at least, you know, I thought it would be 6 to 9 months. I was optimistic.
Okay. We all were a little bit.
Right. My only attitude was, well, I have nothing to lose. Either I'll be on the typical trajectory with the utility. So it'll take 4 years. At least I got started. I have time now to actually try to start that. And there were a lot of people who told us, don't go, you're crazy. And my response was, well, what do you want me to do? Nothing. I'm not going to do nothing. We have to find other ways to get to our customers. And this is one of them.
Now, you also, I noticed on your site, you mentioned you developed some web app, an application for measurement to make the measurement.
Yes. Easier. So we're looking at this also in a very different way than others in the industry are. And we're developing a platform that will make it very easy. Our product is easy to begin with, okay? The standing joke when I was in real estate was, if you see me with a hammer and screwdriver, disarm Rachel immediately, she's dangerous. Okay, then how do you know how to, I don't know how to fix something. I know how to solve a problem.
Okay.
Okay. Our product is so simple to attach. Like I can do it practically blindfolded. I've trained people to install in 15, 20 minutes. It is easy. The most difficult part is measuring, and the measuring is not difficult. But if you're not immersed in the world of windows the way I am now,
right,
much more so than I even was in my real estate life, there's lots of little nuances that make a difference in how your window skin is going to fit. That's why when you're buying windows, they're going to come at least three times. The sales guy is going to come to give you a quote. If you agree to that, then they're going to send a master installer, once you've signed a contract, to measure every opening. And then they might come back a third time to check something. Okay, they measure every single opening. We don't measure every single window. We measure a percent of the windows. Okay, so, but we know that there's a lot of, it's just complicated to get all the data together. So we're building a platform that will be very useful, not just for window skins, but there, you know, for other companies that work at the window, be extremely useful to be able to have this platform where you can preload building data. You know, I got apartments A through J. I have 20 floors or I have 20 buildings, you know, whatever it is. And I have one bedroom, two bedrooms, whatever your mixes are, and to quickly start gathering some of that data the way you need it. Okay. And then once we have it in our platform, we manipulate the data. We can then spit out a quote. It's not all, you know, the whole platform isn't up and running yet, but at the end of the day, that platform, once you sign the contract, it talks to the manufacturer, tells them what they need to do, and it will also spit out an installation schedule. So it tells you when you get your order, where do these things go, right? You're going to have three or four or five different window skins. Well, what are you supposed to do? Put it up against the window and say, I think that's a good fit. Let me try that one. You know, that's not the way to do it. So it tells you where the window skins go. And if you are getting a rebate, it will also give you the paperwork that you need.
Wow.
That platform will take a little bit more time to develop, but we're in that process already. And there's a lot of value in that. And that's the scalability of where we are, because that takes it away from only a few highly trained people to do this, to actually Joe the handyman, Rachel the handywoman, you know, whoever's working at the leasing person, anybody could do it. You just have to go, you know, learn how to use the platform.
So what's fascinating about that, Rachel, is how you've identified not obstacles to any success, but obstacles to growth, right? So like you could, you know, because at some point you can sell what you can sell as, you know, as your own company, reaching out, connecting and so on. But then to get real scale, you need to remove the friction in the market.
Exactly.
And that's what you.
That's what we're doing. And while we will have salespeople out there, we don't really believe we are going to build a sales team that's going to be out there selling to everyone. Mm-hmm. There are already, certainly in the B2B world, there are already people who are selling to these building management companies. Okay. Well, they're already selling six other things. They're selling energy packages. They're selling other information. We're one piece of that. So we eventually expect in the B2B world to be working largely through that channel of other people who are selling and trusted by our customers. Eventually we'll be in the B2C world and that will be different. You know, maybe we'll be one of the big box stores. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go to a big box store, you can measure yourself or you can pay them to measure.
Right.
They'll come to your house and they'll measure for your window treatment.
Right. People buy carpeting or
right. Exactly. You know, and you just pay them an extra whatever. And that's how a lot of people do it. And they trust them because, you know, I know that they vetted, you know, the installers. I don't have to worry that they're sending a criminal into my home.
Right.
Right. So there, you know, we expect to get into the B2C market. We haven't quite scoped out what that's going to look like, but you know, that'll be another challenge once we have a good toehold in the B2B market.
So I'd be remiss in asking this question on the B2B side. And I know the only proper answer is it depends, but I'm going to ask it anyway, which is, you know, if somebody is a landlord, building operator, a dorm room facility, right. They don't want to get rid of their windows. They believe in your technology and they want to put it in. Part of the thought there is you're going to save something on energy percentage wise.
Right.
Right. So, and maybe that's stated as a range, but I'm just curious, like what kind of energy savings? And I know it depends on location. It varies.
What's the base window like to begin with? What's your window? You know, are you single pane or double pane? How old are those windows? What type of window do you have? What's your window to wall ratio? Do you only have 10% of the building is windows or do you have 40%?
Right.
That makes a very big difference. What kind of fuel are you using? What is your, you know, heating and cooling system like? Efficient, inefficient, all of that. Okay. So it can range. The problem is that in the real estate world, traditionally, it's really changing now and COVID's had something to do with that. The typical, you know, knee-jerk response has been, well, if I can't get a 3 to 5 year payback, I'm not doing it. Now, the crazy thing is the vast majority of real estate is held for a long term.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Institutional buyers don't sell. Right. And even real estate owners, a lot of the family real estate owners, you know, they're not flipping. You hear about the flippers, but that's not what's happening. The majority of the market, hold on. I had a friend that once said to me, the best piece of real estate you can own is the apartment building or office building your grandfather bought and paid off. Okay. And that's not atypical of holdings in the US. Okay. And yet they're making very short-term decisions. And we all know, you know, companies that are on the, you know, publicly listed and make decisions based on the quarter right. and the next earnings are not going to do as well in the long run as the ones that have a long view of what's going on. Mm-hmm. COVID has changed that to some extent. So, you know, people realize that A, you can reduce carbon emissions if you stop doing everything we were doing. And I'm not suggesting we should stop our lives,
right.
but we can make a dent. We can do something differently. People are starting to work at home and that's not going to go away because it's very convenient for many. And all of a sudden they realize they're not so comfortable because in the office, someone turned the heat up or turned the air conditioning up, right? But at home, you know, you weren't going to do that so quickly. Well, all of a sudden you're working there all the time and you're darn uncomfortable. So there's a lot of things that change. So people are beginning to realize that we need to make a change. They're also understanding that there are a lot of, even if they don't know it at a very conscious level, there are a lot of hidden costs in real estate that cost real money. And this is true, you know, more true on the B2B side than in the homeowner side, but it is true even on the homeowner side, okay? If, as a real estate owner, if your tenants are uncomfortable, unhappy tenants always cost money. They call and complain. Since you're not replacing the windows, there's nothing your office can do about it, but they're calling and complaining that the heat's not working. They're uncomfortable. Why is it so cold? Why is it so hot? In the meantime, your people can't actually do things that everyone needs done because they have to take care of the person complaining, right? There's a real cost. Some of those people, so in a non-union building, service calls $150 before they do anything. In a union building, it's about $300. So just think if they're calling, you know, three times a month for 5 months of the winter, that one tenant is costing you a few $1,000s. And you can't do anything.
It's not going to be just the one tenant either.
Right. And then, you know, at home, you may be putting in the heater, right? Plugging in the heater. You're remembering to turn it off. Right. You could be putting yourself in a fire situation. So there are real costs to not addressing the loss at the window that are actually costing real estate owners money. So there's a change in that thought process. The other thing that has changed is that New York State has, you know, passed a law last year. You can't just raise the rent as much as you want. Hmm. Now, I've always said it's nice to raise the rent, but you have to manage your expense side too. Well, there are a lot of landlords that just raised the rent, and right. they have to now manage the expense side. And so if you're managing the expense side, you look at what can I spend money on to reduce that. And now the equation is different. So you start to think differently about your building.
Wow. Well, Rachel, we could continue. This is fascinating. I love this. I love it. One, because you bring a real solution to a market with innovation, with the technology. As a smaller company, you're able to develop it. You were able to overcome some very real obstacles in the market. Even changes that we all went through with the pandemic, and it's a big issue that could stop a lot of people cold in their tracks. It didn't stop you. And you're moving forward and you have a vision for where it goes next. So I love your story, and I am confident hearing you that you will just have greater and greater success going forward. So if somebody listening to this podcast wanted to learn more about you and your company, where should they go?
Well, the easiest thing is to go to the website, WEX Energy, W-E-X, E-N-E-R-G-Y. It's just WEX and energy, one word, .com. We're the only one like that. So you'll find us. Okay.
Fantastic.
If you want to email us, you can email us from the website. It's info@wexenergy.com. There's a phone number right at the top. You can click on that and call us as well. We're happy to answer questions. We'd love to talk to your listeners and, you know, see if we can, our solution will work for them.
Fantastic. Well, Rachel, thank you for being a guest on our show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to another episode of the Revenue Throughput Podcast. If you like this episode and if you like the series, make sure you subscribe below. And also, if you liked it, please do review it. When people are looking for something exciting to listen to, especially the kind of content we're bringing, which is practical insights for B2B companies, this is a place and a free resource that they can take advantage of. Let them know about it with your review. So subscribe, review, enjoy. Thanks again.